everybody. Welcome to the Who's Training Who podcast with Allie and Tom. This podcast is mostly about dogs, but we also chat about other animals too. We talk a lot about training and behavior, but we also mix it up and talk about random things related to animals. We hope that by listening to this podcast, we can help you have a better relationship with your pet or any pet you meet. In this episode, we chat with Karen Thomas-Smith of Go Humane Naperville. We learn about puppy mills and some surprising facts about them. Allie talks to us about training mill dogs and some of the problems you may face. So let's get started. Well, welcome to the show, Karen.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So you are part of an organization called Go Humane Naperville. And so how did that come about?
Oh, okay. So about 6 years ago, I read a blog online that declared Naperville as the puppy mill outlet capital of the country because of the amount of puppy mill dogs that were sold through our local pet stores.
And that's throughout the whole country? Mm-hmm. Naperville was, wow.
Yes. And it made me cry. I grew up here and it made me cry. And I found the next day, I was still kind of weepy about it and decided that it was my fight and I was going to do something to change it. So on a whim, I started a Facebook page and it had a really bad name. It was called Make Naperville Puppy Mill Outlet Free.
And that is, I have to admit, that is a really long name. That's not very catchy.
Really bad name. And it just took off. I mean, within a couple of days, I had 1,500 followers.
Wow.
And I had no idea what I was doing. And at the time, I volunteered for a local shelter and was connected with other people who were in this fight. And we just came on this burst on the scene, and within a couple of months, we're at a city council meeting asking them to pass a humane ordinance, getting tabled all the time. And I found myself saying, Naperville needs to go humane. Naperville needs to go humane. And so it kind of hit me. That was a better name. Go Humane Naperville. Just to the point. So I changed the name and we kept fighting for 5.5 years until our ordinance passed.
So how did puppy mills even start? Has this been a thing for a long time or is it something that's more recent?
It's a post-World War II invention, for lack of a better word. Farmers were looking for another avenue to make money and they decided to factory farm dogs as their cash crop.
And so even after post-World War II, that was something that somebody's like, hey, there's a business in this.
Well, yeah, maybe they had dogs. I don't know, who the first one was to come up with this, but they just decided to start factory farming dogs as they factory farm other animals and selling the puppies. And it's grown since then.
And because of social media, we see more and more about the conditions of these, of the puppy mill dogs back. I mean, as much as you know, back in the beginning stages, was it always as terrible conditions? Was it always, who cares about the dog? Let's keep pumping them out.
I would think that would have depended on who was factory farming the dogs, but I don't know.
Most of us know puppy mills from pet stores. Like, I mean, every day, pet stores try to deny it. People know different. Some people don't know. I was one of those people that didn't know when we bought our dog from a puppy store and then found out after the fact where ours probably came from or something like it. So has it always been like the mills have found stores to sell it at? Or when did that shift go that stores decided, hey, let's start selling these dogs?
Well, I think, I really don't have the answer to that. I would think that they would have started tapping into that as soon as pet stores started growing. But I don't know the exact history of the pet store puppy mill connection. I've never spent the time looking into it because I'm spending my time trying to stop it.
Right. Totally understand that. So, I assume that stores get the puppy mill dogs because they can get it for cheap and then sell it for more than they buy it for. So I guess, everyone talks about profits when it comes to puppy mills. That's why people do it. That's, if a store is selling a dog for $3,000, $4,000, why is the puppy, how much percentage does the puppy mill get for that?
So the mill itself can have anywhere from, you know, I guess of 5 breeding dogs to hundreds of breeding dogs. And they sell for a few $100s a pop, and they have customers across the country. So they're raking in the money, and they don't have to worry about, you know, what if we don't sell them? What if we don't? Because there's always a customer to take it. Many times they sell to a middleman, like a transporter, and they will then farm them out to the country. They just want to have the dogs, sell them for, you know, $300-$400 a pop, and be done with them. And they just keep breeding. Since they have so many dogs and they keep have a continuous breeding cycle, they have a continuous product to get out there. It's just like any other product.
Right. The animals aren't anything except just money machine that just keeps product. Bringing out the money. So, you know, I've heard some puppy mills and stores who say, well, we get our dogs from, I think, USDA approved or whatever the, I don't know what the governing organization is, but what does that even mean?
Over 5 breeding dogs, females, you are supposed to be licensed by either the Department of Agriculture or the USDA. Certainly the USDA, if you are selling your dogs across state lines, you have to have a USDA license. They consider companion animals to be livestock. So the bar for the care of the animal is set very, very low. I mean, you hear about the horrid conditions that, you know, pigs and cows face in factory farms. Well, companion animals, dogs, cats, and rabbits are facing those same horrible conditions in the factory farm puppy mills. And it's just simply to keep costs down and profits up.
I guess that's the struggle when, you know, everyone's like, why can't we just treat dogs better? Is because laws are focused that dogs are just like cows. Like it's hard, you know, it's hard to change that because that's a lot of people still view animals.
As states try and pass more humane laws for companion animals, what they're up against, especially in the Midwest, is the large companies, and it's well documented, Monsanto, Hormel, Smithfield, the meat companies fight against the anti-puppy mill laws because they see it as a slippery slope. If we let you pass this law helping dogs, you're going to come for our pigs, cows, and chickens. So, boom, you've classified them as livestock. They're staying that way so you can't come after our products. And there's a movie, a documentary called Dog by Dog, which came out a few years ago, and it's very non-graphic, but it explains perfectly why it's so hard to pass laws ending puppy mills. And it is, they have been shot down by the big meat companies. And Missouri had passed a law that improved conditions for dogs in breeding facilities, and it ended up being signed into law and then overturned because of the meat companies. It's a really, really interesting documentary.
So it seems like there's a lot of people who don't want, you know, dogs to be treated humanely for, you know, obviously money. So, you know, cities have tried to pass laws to stop puppy mills, you know, and all good intentioned, where, you know, you can only sell rescue dogs or only sell, you know, from a shelter or whatever. People in puppy mill who run puppy mills aren't stupid, and they've figured out loopholes, whether they were created to be like that, the laws with hands or what. So they've done some pretty interesting things. And what have they done to try to circumvent some of these laws to still get puppy mill dogs into stores?
They've created phony rescues, and they found the Chicago Tribune actually broke the story with a lot of help from Bailing Out Benji, which is a big nonprofit that helps fight puppy mills. And they're excellent researchers, but they tracked the phony rescues to the same property as a very well-known large-scale commercial breeder. And we're even able to find documentation of split litters. So, you know, let's just say it's a Siberian Husky litter. half of the litter. They've had six puppies. Half of them are going to traditional pet stores under the name of the Miller, the puppy Miller. The other half, under the phony rescue, were being shipped off to Chicago pet stores, to many pet stores in California. Basically, to any place where they had these humane ordinances passed, and they were slipping them into the pet stores under their phony rescue. And the Chicago Tribune broke the story, and the phony rescue has now been shut down, and they are facing criminal charges.
Well, that's good to hear, at least.
It's just like whack-a-mole, you know, they're smart, and they come up with a new plan, and they get shut down, and then they come up with the next one. So you just have to continually be on your toes and watching for what they're going to do next.
So we know they're still trying to figure out how to get past what they were shut down with. They'll figure out another way to get dogs where they, because there's, I mean, apparently there's money, even though, you know, selling a dog for $400 didn't, I thought, you know, they were at least selling it for more to the store, since the store charges, you know, $3,000 to $4,000 for, you know, dogs, that they would be getting a little bit more. Cause it's like, why wouldn't you just open up your own store then, if you can sell the dog for, you know, for that much money?
They have so many dogs and they have so many outlets that they really don't need to. They just need to offload them more than they need to, you know, are willing to condense their breeding stock and be somewhat more humane or legitimate. They just have so many outlets. They sell them on the internet like crazy. You know, and pictures lie, and the internet is a scary place to buy a dog, because if you can't see, you know, the rule of thumb, you can't see the mother, you can't see where the puppies were born, walk away, because you're assuredly buying from a mill.
And so recently there's been, at least it feels like recently to me, and maybe just because I was, you know, we know how Facebook and all those algorithms works. Once you look for something, it starts showing you everything in the world about that one thing. So, you know, recently to me, it seems like we've been seeing a lot of sick puppies, or at least people being more open about it, and seeing the lawsuits coming out against, you know, certain stores across the country about that they're constantly selling sick puppies. So how is that more right than wrong? Are there more sick puppies being sold than healthy ones?
You know, there's really no way to know. I've been looking, trying to find statistics. Honestly, because of the shaming that happens when people say, I bought a sick dog, many people don't feel like they can come out and ask for help because they're afraid of being publicly shamed, which is one thing we don't subscribe to and we don't tolerate on Go Humane Naperville. When you know better, you do better. But anyway, we don't know how many sick dogs are sold. We know that there is one national chain of pet stores that requires anybody who needs medical assistance with their puppy to sign a gag order saying that they won't speak about it, they won't post about it, they won't file a Better Business Bureau complaint. And if they do, then they either have to pay back the money. And I have copies of the non-disclosure. They either have to pay them back or they can be sued. And so they scare these people who are facing large vet bills into silence. And so we really don't know how many sick puppies are sold. Many times the puppies are taken back. They'll return them if it's in a, you know, the 3-day window or whatever window the store has. And the store isn't going to make that public. They're just going to dispose of the puppy.
Yeah. So I'm assuming that means the puppy is probably going to be put to sleep. They're not even going to spend time trying to get it better.
If it's lucky, it will be put to sleep. The Humane Society has some pretty, pretty graphic, scary videos, undercover videos of, I don't know how much you really want me to go into, but of sick animals just being stuck in dark rooms to die or in refrigerators to die.
Wow.
They don't humanely euthanize them because that costs them money.
So they don't. So that's what happens to dogs who are sick and are returned. They get, you know, they're put to sleep, they're tortured till they die. I imagine not every dog gets sold. No matter how cute a puppy is, some dogs just don't get sold. So what happens to them? It's not like, do they, you know, so what happens?
A couple of different things that happen. Just like a pair of shoes, they're marked down until they sell. or they are returned to the puppy miller because they don't come spayed or neutered. So they are returned to the miller and put into the cycle of becoming a breeding dog.
Because I hear that's the excuse for why people say, well, we should buy the dogs because, you know, someone's going to buy them or, you know, something, whatever. It's okay to buy, you know, it's like there's a justification as to why they should buy the dog. And, you know, is it as simple as just don't buy the dog? Is that what's going to stop them? Is that what's going to stop this? You know, is that just kind of collateral until it happens? Or, you know, is there a solution to...
It's really as simple as, it is as simple as do not buy the puppy. Do not. You are just creating the supply and demand. It is all about supply and demand. If you stop buying the puppies, it reduces the demand at the mill, and then they're going to peter out. So that it is truly as simple as don't buy the puppy, and eventually the mills will close.
Right. And obviously the way we've been talking, they, you know, I mean, we like to make everybody a villain. And, you know, coming from me, it's hard, you know, to, you know, I didn't buy my puppy, you know, thinking, oh, I'm buying a puppy mill dog and it's, you know, whatever. If I knew what I knew, I probably wouldn't have done it, you know, but he still is the greatest dog I ever had. But to have, when you're doing this, there obviously has to be something that you just don't think about what you're doing to the dog. You know, that everybody buys into this, that, you know, we treat the dog terribly. And then even in the store, all the workers, the owner are buying into the fact that, you know, you treat a dog like this, you treat another living thing. I mean, I guess that goes with our society too, but in general, you know, there's a lot of people buying into this, into how you treat a dog just for profit.
There are. I mean, the pet store owners are certainly, they don't really right. care. I mean, I feel sorry for the people who walk into those stores and they fall for the barrage of lies that they're being shown. The meet our breeder videos and the, you know, just the blatant lying. And we have paperwork from the large nationwide chain where they said, oh, it's a hobby breeder. But then you go and, you know, once you can get through the USDA files that have been taken offline and now are spotty online, you find out, you know what, it is a big large scale commercial breeder and they were lying. But you now have the dog, you've fallen in love with the dog, they take advantage of your emotions, they take advantage of, you know, the need that our society now has such a need for instant gratification, and they want that puppy now. They don't want to wait. You know, a reputable breeder has a waiting list. For the most part, they don't have a continual supply of puppies, but a pet store does.
Got it. So that's the draw, is that you don't have to wait. You just get your puppy right. I mean, when we got our dog, our dog just had, I mean, I've said it on the podcast before, our puppy had a bow tie and my wife fell in love with him. And that's why, you know, in the picture, and it's like, oh, we need him, you know, right now because of that. But it never occurred to me at that time to go to a breeder or even, you know, how to find one out. So what can we look for, and how do we find a reputable breeder that has a dog that we want, or, you know, and then how can you tell that they are good?
So reputable breeders will want to meet you, plain and simple. They want to know where their puppy is going. They will always take their puppy back. If you bring a dog home and suddenly find you have an allergy or your child has an allergy, a reputable breeder wants that dog back. They want to rehome that dog themselves. And there's no timeline on that. They'll say, you know, if it's in 7 years, I want this dog back. You'll see the mother and the father, nor maybe just one, but you'll see one of the parents, and they will let you see where the puppies were raised. And if you cannot see where your puppy was born, if you cannot see one of the parents, you need to walk away because it's not a reputable breeder. If you're interested in a specific breed, you can go to the AKC website, and the AKC is not a hero in the puppy mill game. They have their own problems,
yes, they do.
But they will have on their website reputable breeders, or a breed specific rescue, and they will help you find a breeder. And then after that, you have to use your own judgment. But walking into a pet store or ordering in line is most assuredly supporting a puppy mill.
Now, do you think that there's still people who are like me when we got our dog who just were ignorant to the fact that puppy mills exist? Or do you think over the years it's becoming more known? And is that helping? Is that hurting? Or do people just, are people just turning a blind eye because they get a new puppy that, you know, they get a new puppy instantly?
I think it's a combination of everything. I think social media is really helping bring out the puppy mill issue. And I think definitely I have a 20-year-old daughter. And when, you know, she has her own family in that generation, I think it's going to be a death blow for puppy mills because they are aware, they know, they've grown up with, we don't buy from pet stores. People in my generation and older, I don't think that everybody knows. Some of them choose not to know because they think, oh, I don't want to hear about any bad dog stories. I don't want to hear any abuse.
Out of sight, out of mind.
And I get it. But there's some people who just really don't know. There's people who choose not to know. But I really think in the younger generation, puppy mills are done because they know.
At least most more people than now. Mm-hmm. So what can, you know, I think part of the problem maybe that you say out of sight, out of mind for some people is because they just don't know what to do. It's overwhelming. You see the images of dogs in terrible conditions. You see the Sarah McLachlan commercials of dogs in shelters who look like terrible. They play, you know, she play her song and you're like, oh God, you know, like, I don't know how to do this. And then you see puppy mills. I mean, I'm part of a Facebook group called, Backyard Breeders Exposed or something like that. And like they show some, mm-hmm. and that's not just dogs. They're showing like livestock. You know, they're showing everything there. And it's terrible what you see out there.
Haunting. Right. It haunts you. Yeah.
But it also gets overwhelming. And you're like, I mean, it almost seems too big to help. So what can people do to help the cause to try to stop this?
It's as easy as, you know, if you're on Facebook or Instagram, it's as easy as sharing a post, you know, the non-graphic posts. It's as easy as, you know, saying to your friend, if they're talking about getting a dog, hey, you know, don't go to this store. They buy from puppy mills. There are very simple things people can do to help. They, you know, if you're grassroots actively minded and your town doesn't have a humane pet store ordinance, you can send emails and ask your city council to consider passing a humane pet store ordinance. It's actually better to get them passed preemptively before a pet store moves to your town. It's easier to get it done that way than it is to wait until they're here, they're established, they're selling pets, and they're contributing to the tax base.
So obviously you have an organization, Go Humane Naperville. Can people help you out in any way or support you or join you in any of the activities that you do?
We're always looking for people to help us. We are not a 501c3, so we're not a nonprofit. We're just a community action group. I don't collect any money. I don't get paid for what I do. I spend good portions of my day trying to help people who have purchased sick puppies find a way through the pet store baloney and get help for their animal and help for themselves. And then I spend the other portion of my day helping a specific group of people pass humane ordinances in Illinois towns. So I'm always looking for people who are willing to write a rational, respectful email to a town asking them to pass a humane ordinance. You know, the minute you get, it's an emotional issue, but the minute you get emotional and
people turn off,
people that you're shut down, you know, and people will say, oh, can you send me what you want me to say? No, you know what? I can't, because we've seen, you know, how canned emails tank a humane ordinance effort in other emails. If you have to put your own independent thought together, even if it is, this store sells from puppy mills and I vote, you know, and as simple as that. But there's always ways that people can help by just even sending an email, making a phone call. You can follow the Illinois Humane Society field director on social media. And he often has things that he's looking for people to help with, you know, contact the state senators, contact your representatives. We have this bill, we have that bill. So there's lots of ways people can help that are easy, and you're not faced with the haunting images of abused animals.
You know, it sounds great to like, oh, I'm going to adopt a puppy mill dog who was, you know, put through the paces, and I'm going to rescue and make this dog a good life. But I mean, as we find out through this podcast, and if you work with any dog, you realize it really isn't that simple. It's not that rosy of a story sometimes. So what are some of the issues that an owner would face if they're going to, adopt, rescue, whatever the word, a puppy mill dog?
So the biggest thing that we see with puppy mill dogs is they lack confidence because they have never left a cage. Many, many times they are very, very, very shut down. So if you are going to take on a puppy mill dog, you have to have a lot of patience. It can take years for them to even begin to come out of their shell. One of my training colleagues has a puppy mill dog. She's a little Cairn Terrier, potentially mix. And even still, Daphne is very shut down and fearful, especially in new settings. They don't adapt well. They just have no experience with the world whatsoever. They've never seen anything outside of their cage, and they may potentially have never even left their cage, not even for cleaning reasons. So they have no socialization. They've grown up there. Like Karen said, the puppies that don't get sold get returned to the cage. So they've bounced from cage to cage, and that's the amount of socialization they have, essentially.
I guess I never, we were talking about how they're taken back, possibly, killed or whatever, or put back into cages. Do you know how often mama dogs, papa dogs are just surrendered?
Not very often. You have to have a relationship with the puppy miller. They aren't a real trusting group. It's hard to get on their property. Like National Mill Dog Rescue, Teresa Strotter has done an amazing job of forming relationships with puppy millers. As Good as Gold, a rescue, has amazing relationships where the dogs can be surrendered to them. But it isn't as often as you would hope that they would give up these dogs. They usually take them to auctions once they've used them up, and then they're sold at an auction to another miller to see if they can squeeze another litter out of them.
No, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Every once in a while, a few of the rescues do buy dogs from auctions to take those mamas into rescue, which is a controversial thing that we don't need to touch on, but that might be something that we do in the future.
Right.
Very controversial, but.
I think it kind of goes into the fact of people who are like, well, I should buy the puppy because something bad's going to happen to him. So, yes, you're feeding the money, but you're saving the puppy from, dying or something else, So yeah, but you're right. That's a different podcast, different ethical talk about that.
Well, and the point of what happens to these dogs, we don't see a lot of them as training clients. I've maybe seen three, because unfortunately, a lot of them don't make it out of the puppy mill. Unfortunately, a lot of them die slowly and painfully because they don't get the veterinary care that they need. We don't see a ton. But the ones we do see, I can tell. I can even tell puppies that are from puppy mills away.
So what shows up in that you can see that?
Just a lot of it is breed standard. They don't come out the way that, a reputable breeder would be breeding them. Many of them have anxiety already. A lot of them are purchased after their socialization window, and you can tell that they are more skittish and don't have a lot of life experiences. If an owner tells me that they had a lot of health issues the first few months of their life, and that's why they haven't sought training until now, usually that's a puppy mill red flag. I obviously, on my questionnaires, ask where they got their dogs. And a lot of times I won't even pull that part up or pay attention to it until I'm like, this is a puppy mill dog. Let me ask who their breeder was and dive into some research. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of my clients just don't even know any better. You know, the last Frenchie that I had, I think you maybe saw him. Well, I mean, you obviously saw him on my social media, but he, you know, I could tell right away that he was from, you know, and what clients call Amish breeders, which are puppy mills. And I, you know, texted her a couple days into the board and train program and was like, hey, you know, where did your Frenchie come from? And he was underweight, already having lots of health issues, not to mention that he was a blue brindle color, which they do not make French bulldogs that color. So, you know, just knowing his anxiety issues with the crate, I could tell. Those are some of my more common ones that I can notice. But, you know, usually right away you can look and say, that dog did not come from a reputable breeder, whether it came through a rescue or, you know, it came from a place that they didn't get to meet the parents. That's usually my answer.
We're seeing all these new dogs coming about, especially in the pandemic. You know, we're seeing everybody's getting a puppy now, whether it's adopted or bought. Are puppy mills creating new types of dogs, mixing dogs together that probably shouldn't be? Is that where this is coming from? Like reputable breeders wouldn't be mixing, you know, a doodle and a Frenchie or something. I mean, maybe there is a dog like that.
No, but I mean, you've got your reputable breeder that created all your doodles. I mean, your Labradoodles, your Bernedoodles, you know, all your doodles came from reputable breeders to start with, or, you know, at least at the very head of it.
I don't know. I think honestly, that doodle thing, like the Bernedoodles, that is the latest thing from Dr. Frankenstein's dark barn on the mill. You know, like the little Labradoodle, you know, and the Golden Doodle, they were the kind of the original designer dogs, and the man who created them has come out and said, I wish I'd never done this.
But oh, now yeah, the Sheep wrote Doodle, multiple articles.
Oh yeah. Now there is definitely Dr. Frankenstein creating these things. There was one local pet store who they're on their website had all kinds of cutesy names that we would just die laughing because they had Schnockers and Frugs and Chugs. And actually on Go Humane Naperville, I screenshot them and I was making fun of all these dog names, and they changed it because it was so obvious that they were just thrown together.
Well, my mom has something called a Pee-wee, which, you know, before this, I mean, she's had him for, I don't know, 16 years at this point. And, you know, this was before I was educated. I was a teenager that we got him, and he came from a pet store that was, oh, you know, we only take them from reputable breeders that you're, you know, we take them from accidental litters in the country or whatever. And, you know, obviously now I'm like, mom, what were you doing? But you know, it was, oh, you know, he's a designer dog. He's a peewee. He's mixed with six different things. Well, that sounds like a big, you know, happy accident to just put a nice label on it. Sure. That makes it better. No. And it's like six breeds and one dog is, you know, not going to create a healthy dog genetically in the first place, but you know, to then put it's a designer dog. No, it's a mutt. That was an accident, and you sold it for more money because you knew how to market it, basically.
You bring up the word mutt, and I've gotten to arguments with people when they tell me that their dog that is mixed between two dogs isn't considered a mutt. Is that that's considered a mutt, right?
Yeah. It's a mixed breed mutt, right? Whatever you want to call it.
Right. I mean, people have argued with me about it, and you know,
just because it was done on purpose doesn't make them any less of a purebred. A Labradoodle is not a purebred. Pure means you have one type of dog in you.
Right, but there isn't that much.
You know where those lines came from.
But that there isn't as much purebred as we think there is nowadays, right? Because dogs have been mixed with so much now, or is there still?
Oh, there's definitely preservationist breeders. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, your reputable breeders will trace those lines back. The owner of the store that I rent from, he's got books of his lines of his spaniels and you know, all of his hound dogs and stuff like that.
They actually like to be called preservationist breeders now because they are preserving the true lines of the dogs. And it's very hard to get them to join in the puppy mill fight, unfortunately, because of the maverick animal advocates that kind of lump preservationist breeders in with puppy millers. And it's quite a shame, because when we can get them to help us, they're very helpful.
Right. It's kind of like taking us, you know, you're taking a step forward and then someone comes in and, you know, pushes you back, you know, or to the side a little bit. And it's just kind of, you know, you think you're doing a good thing, but you're really just not doing it. So someone has bought a puppy mill dog and they're like, Allie, I need help. So what are some things that you tell them to how to help them out with the dog?
So whether it's a puppy mill puppy or a puppy mill adult dog, you know, we're going to treat it a little bit differently, because while your puppies are still going to lack confidence, they are still young and are going to be more willing to experiment with the world around them. Whereas, you know, your puppy mill mamas are pretty much going to be shut down. I actually have a puppy mill dad as a client right now. And, you know, he's very, very, very shut down. Sometimes other dogs can help the adult dogs, you know, same with puppies. But usually, you know, one of the biggest things that I tell clients is it's just going to take time. I mean, I can give you all these confidence boosting exercises and all these things, but half the time these dogs are so shut down that they're not even going to be willing to take treats or play the training game or do any of that. So, you know, if I'm giving you any kind of training exercises, it's going to be more along the lines of enrichment. It's going to be, let your dog learn how to search for food and almost find motivation in food. But in a very small area, you know, you're not going to be spreading food all around your house. It's going to be, here's your area rug, and you're going to put food piles on that to start with. Don't take your new dog anywhere, really. Let them get used to the environment. A lot of them don't even want to go to the bathroom outside. A lot that will use potty pads inside. And, you know, I tell them that is fine. If your dog does not want to go outside and you're okay with potty pads, absolutely go for it. Door thresholds are scary for them. So, you know, just thinking about trying to get them outside and inside and all that, scary, scary, scary. But, you know, the biggest thing that I tell these people is, you know, you have to have patience. And puppy mill dogs are not for everybody. If you have a busy lifestyle and people are coming in and out of your home, puppy mill dog's not for you. You know, if you're the person that wants to show off your new dog to everybody, puppy mill dog's not for you. If you want to take your dog to group classes right away, puppy mill dog's not for you. It does take a very special person to have that patience and to be willing to wait it out. And like I said, it can be years. And that dog's never going to be a normal, happy-go-lucky, go-everywhere-with-you dog. It's just never going to happen.
So if you're thinking about getting one, you have to put the side of I'm helping to the side and not make that decision based on just I'm helping a puppy mill dog, because it's a lot of work, and there's just it, you know, and it might be that you never have that dog that wants to jump on your lap, or that is gonna, you know, play fetch with you in the yard, or, you know, like it's a different type of dog ownership, which I hate using that term, but it's a different type of relationship than, you know, a true puppy or a dog that didn't go through that.
Yeah. And I mean, your younger dogs that you get from your puppy mills at 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, whatever, you know, they're still going to have issues. And a lot of it's going to be more because they were unhealthy than they were behavioral. But, you know, looking at what they're coming from. So there are studies out there that talk more about this. And I can try to see if I can find them, or actually I can get them from Dr. Jopala. But, they say that if mom is in utero and stressed out, her babies are more prone to be reactive. So those puppy mill mamas are very stressed out.
That is my puppy that we have.
Directly correlates to the babies that they're producing. So I see a lot of puppy mill puppies, even if they're in their socialization stage still, that become reactive at some point because of what their moms went through and what their grandmas went through. So it's not, you know, it's not all up to us. And that's, you know, something that goes for all dogs, you know, our rescue dogs, our breeder dogs, our puppy mill dogs. We can do as much as we can do, but at some point it's up to those genetics and what happened to those puppies in utero and what happened to their moms in utero. So not saying don't do everything you possibly can, but realize it's not your fault if your dog becomes reactive. A lot of it is overbreeding, inbreeding, and poor breeding. And it starts with a lot of pet star puppies and what people consider the Amish breeders that are not puppy mills somehow in their mind, but they are.
Right. Backyard breeders, like people, like, are they considered puppy mills too if they just come from somebody's home?
Generally not. I mean, your puppy mills are more like producing multiple litters from multiple moms. Whereas like your backyard breeders are just really irresponsible and are like, hey, I'm going to make money. And then, oh, why not do it again? Puppy mills are usually larger scale than your backyard breeders. Your backyard breeders are still just as terrible as your puppy mills.
Five or more.
So yeah, most of your in-home backyard breeders aren't going to have that many moms.
And I've seen them at the shelter a couple of times. And it's just sad when you see them come in, especially the moms. You see them come in and they're just...
Yeah, it's not any better, but it's just a smaller scale. Right. Generally. I mean, a lot of them probably become puppy mills at some point.
One thing is really important to know if you're going to consider adopting a mill mama or mill daddy is most of the time they're not housebroken.
Yeah.
So you have to be really aware of that. If you're going to take them into your house, that you're going to have to spend a lot of time trying to housebreak them. And sometimes you can't because they've been 6-7 years eliminating where they sleep and eat and they don't know any better. And it's a hard habit to break. Counter conditioning them is not easy. And I love the people who do.
Which is just interesting because, you know, because when you get a puppy, they're always like, make sure the cage is, you know, if you're going to crate them, make sure the crate is just big enough, but not too big that they can eliminate there. And then the dog does eliminate. And then, you know, it's just, it's like going against what you're taught in the beginning about how to potty train a dog. It just wouldn't work with the puppy mill dog because they have to go and they just get used to, you know, because dogs don't like peeing where they sleep or where they are. But when you got to go, you got to go. And, you know, Allie, is there like hope at the end of the tunnel with that? Can you train a dog that came from, you know, as Karen said, from years and years of peeing in their place? Can you counteract that?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's just going to take more time and be harder. I mean, a lot of our puppy mill dogs, we don't even recommend crating at any point because they have so much time in a crate. So the potty training plan is just a little bit different than it would be with, you know, the traditional, yes, have a crate so they can learn to, you know, hold it and, you know, not chew things and all those things. I mean, it's even hard to potty train a stray a lot of times that's been on the streets and can go outside whenever they feel like it. They have no bladder control. But yeah, I mean, the puppy mill dogs, you can't utilize the crate and say, oh, you're not going to go in there. Yeah, they're going to go in there. And again, you know, being afraid of outside a lot of times and being afraid of door thresholds a lot of times, it is hard to potty train them. It is. Usually we start with potty pads in a centralized area and basically cover the entire floor with potty pads and then, you know, start taking those potty pads away slowly so that they start learning, hey, the potty pads are a good place to go. That or, you know, if they aren't afraid to go outside, taking them out very frequently and reinforcing the heck out of them when they do use the bathroom outside.
So my last question will be about, it's about fear and being human, you know, fear aggression. And is there a risk of human fear? Is it human fear aggression? What's the term for that?
So, I mean, obviously with any dog, they have the risk of turning fear aggressive towards people. Most of the time, our puppy mill dogs are just so fearful that they aren't going to aggress because
they're just shut down.
They're in learned helplessness. I mean, for a long time, you know, most of them do not do not try to nip and bite once they get a little settled. They might at first, just because they don't know, you know, they're like, what is coming at me and why, you know, they don't get a lot of human interaction. But you know, one of the things that I tell people is, you know, leave that dog alone, just let that dog acclimate however he or she needs to do so. So that we don't develop the, I need to bite because you keep pushing me farther and farther. I would say they're just most of the time just so shut down that you don't see a lot of aggressive behavior.
Let's give a big thanks to Karen for chatting about Go Humane Naperville. Hopefully you learned some new things and can help the cause of stopping puppy mills. If you are enjoying what you are hearing and haven't yet, please subscribe, comment, and or rate our podcast on whatever platform you're listening to us on. Also, please share our podcast on social media. You can also join our Facebook group at Who's Training Who to chat about this topic or anything really about animals. You can also share funny or cool things dealing with animals. If you have a topic idea or an Ask a Trainer question, please comment in our Facebook group or email info@waggytails.pet. Thanks for listening to Who's Training Who.